movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
We are joined once again by Fionnuala Jones, Esther McCarthy and Dean McGuinness, though there's a little technical whoopsie with Esther, but we will be speaking with her very shortly. But Dean, I'll start with you because essentially you are so lazy you didn't even bother choosing any beers this week.
I know, I'm just passing on the work to other people and letting them choose them. And what's more, the poor people that I chose didn't even get to taste the beers before choosing them.
Yeah,
so,
well, a particular element of cruelty is asking a pregnant woman to choose a beer for this week's show.
Well, Claire, I know, has exquisite taste, and I knew that even during pregnancy that she would be anticipating what she could drink in a few months' time.
So anyway, what was the thinking behind your crazy plan?
Right, what we've got is we're talking a bit about craft beer community today, and there is an event coming up in a few weeks' time, Monday 17th of May through to Sunday the 23rd of May, called Indie Beer Week. It's a celebration of independent Irish craft breweries. There are 20 Irish craft breweries involved. I'm going to call them out very, very quickly. Wicklow Brewing Company, Porthouse Brewing Company, Metalman, Kinnegar, Dead Center Brewing, Brew Brewery, Blacks of Kinsale, West Kerry Brewery, Trouble Brewing, Lochgill Brewery in Sligo, Hope Beer, Cotton Ball Brewing, Black Donkey, 12 Acres Brewing, Real Deal Brewery, St. Mel's Brewery, Line Man, Dungarn, Canvas and Ballykill Cabin.
You'd have been quicker just saying what breweries weren't involved rather than what were involved.
It would have. So we're tasting two beers from two of these breweries, but I had an experience in Belgium once where I was in Brussels, went to a beer museum and they gave me a sample of beer afterwards. And I said, oh, where's what brewery is the beer from? And they said, oh, we're not telling you. They said, it's a Belgian beer and things. So what we'll do is we'll taste the beers after I've tasted them. I will tell what the beer is called and what brewery it's from.
Right.
But it's from one of the 20 breweries.
There's three beers I'm looking at that are in here with the studio with me. And one looks like, it's a pretty conventional beer. The other two look a bit gimmicky, or am I being unfair?
We've got a couple of cans, and they've done some interesting things. So we've got oatmeal IPA brewed with red potato. And we've got what's called a New England IPA, which is a slightly less bitter IPA that's very juicy, and it is brewed with organic oats. There's a couple of other beers that were passed on to me as well. We'll probably only get through two today, I guess, on the show. There is a very cool one that has been brewed, and it has been boiled for 24 hours. To concentrate the wort and then fermented to 12%. We're not tasting that one today, but it's one of the ones that was sent to me.
Right, okay.
And it's just an example of the types of beers they're doing.
It's boiled for 24 hours, but that doesn't reduce the alcohol in it.
It works in the opposite way, because the boiling happens before the fermentation. So you start out with a liquid with a certain amount of sugar, and then as they boil off the water, you end up with a more concentrated sugar liquid. So then when that sugar is turned into alcohol during the fermentation, you end up with 12% ABV.
Right. Okay. That's very interesting. A great week for you, Esther, given that, you know, you're going to be talking about arguably the best film of the year, and a film that I saw in the review in The Guardian today said Wild Mountain Time makes The Quiet Man look like a documentary about crack dealers.
Top of the morning, Joel.
Top of the morning, Faith and Bigara. Did the trailer, because obviously, probably everybody in Ireland saw the trailer, did the trailer really give a sense of what this movie is going to be like?
To be fair, it doesn't. The movie is far more batshit than the trailer could ever have presented it to us. It is astonishing. I was looking through, I wrote live notes. Sometimes I write live notes if I'm doing something, watching a film. And I was looking through those notes the other day, and it's just a list of questions. It's like, what period is this supposed to be? Why are they saying those words? Is it meant to be a comedy?
Yes.
So that's kind of like so many questions, but fascinating in the sense that, like, there's really good people on this film. Like, it's a really good cast. Emily Blunt and Jamie Dornan should be oozing the chemistry. So to be fair, they've had to have most of the jibs far, as does Christopher Walken's vowel mangling accent throughout, but like I'm laying this squarely at the feet of John Patrick Shanley because there are too many Irish crew and background people on this film that I know are really talented people. So I think this is the filmmaker maybe just having a bit too much control, just doing a bit too much of what the E.L. James did with 50 Shades of Grey, the third film, and, you know, having a bit too much influence and maybe not having people go, you know, maybe doing hackneyed Irish accents and putting a shawl and hobnail boots on Emily Blunt's character in a movie that's supposed to be contemporary mightn't be a good idea.
And making her smoke a pipe like Peg. But this was, because apparently Shanley had written, this was a stage play before this, which was equally as horrific.
Apparently it was, yes, yeah.
So how this got to be a film?
It's a really interesting disconnect between how we see ourselves and how other people, well, how John Patrick Shanley sees us, let's say. So I think that's really, it's fascinating.
But John Patrick Shanley is Irish-American. He has, like, relations who live in Ireland, who, you know, maybe should have slapped him upside the head occasionally.
And famously said in an interview with Variety that if he got people to speak like his relatives spoke, that nobody would understand them. So I think the people all over the world who adored normal people would probably be baffled by that comment as well, you know. But it's not just the stage Irishness, but we'll talk a lot about that. But
yeah, it's, okay. There's a bit of acid
really
in this
bad
film.
Oh, it's a really badly made film as well, on so many other different levels.
Right, okay. And Nomadland?
Nomadland is your drink that you take, your palate cleanser after Wild Mountain Time, I think. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. It's a filmmaker, Chloe Zhao. I've had my eye on her for a while, thanks to a couple of Irish actors I'd know who'd be very good on the radar now with up-and-coming talent, and told me a few years ago to watch a little American indie called The Rider. Fabulous film, dealing with mostly, if not all, untrained actors. It's a lovely film. Frances McDormand saw it as well and said, who is this woman? I want to make a film with her. I'll exec produce it. And they got talking, and so we have this wonderful, beautiful kind of modern day Western, I suppose, is how I'd describe it.
And Frances McDormand is now like total legend status at this point.
Oh, totally. And it's a lovely, quiet performance from her as well. I'm so glad she won the Oscar for it, because I was reading the forecasts last weekend and the main argument was she was too wonderful in her other films and won two Oscars before, so we shouldn't give her this one. And
yeah,
I was like, no.
Yeah. That is true. And I think when she won before, she did, in part of her speech, she was talking about having, I forget how she described it, but a kind of a contract to kind of have as much diversity in the staff making films. Which apparently she made sure this happened on Nomadland as well. So that was kind of nice to see. She took her own her own advice. She is great. And Fionnuala, I would have been interested to see this. It was going to be a Dionne Warwick biopic, but apparently that's gone belly up now.
Yeah, it seems to be on the rocks because of who's involved. I'm not sure if you saw the expose in the Hollywood Reporter. I think it was either this week or last week about a producer called Scott Rudin. He'd been known for working in Hollywood on Broadway. He had taken an interest in the biopic when Warwick was mad tweeting about it and said that she'd originally pitched this series to Netflix. And there were a couple of people interested in the project. I think Rudin saw these tweets, contacted her, and I think there were talks about them maybe doing something in the same vein as some of his past work. He's worked on the likes of The Social Network and stuff. But they seem to be on hold now following some really serious allegations against Rudin. There seems to be this pattern of abusive behaviour from him towards his staffers. Like, that piece in The Hollywood Reporter is well worth reading, but definitely not for the faint of heart. Like, there's claims about him, like, throwing glass bowls and, like, a baked potato at staffers.
And a baked potato would take your eye out.
Exactly, yeah, as opposed to maybe mashed, I don't know. But yeah, serious reports of just this kind of constant behaviour on set with people. There was two other employees who reportedly had to go to hospital as a result of his outbursts. There's allegations of him slamming an Apple computer on one of his staffers' heads.
Ah, Jesus.
It's I think this is kind of the second coming in terms of like one of these big kind of, in the same way, in the same vein as Weinstein, I suppose, one of these kind of big untouchable names in Hollywood is seemingly being brought down because of this, which is great to see. But as I said, it means this Warwick biopic might be on ice for a few years, which is a shame because I need to see that story on the big screen. And if people don't follow her on social media, they need to, because she is hilarious.
And the allegations against Garrood, are any of them like of sexual of nature, or is he just a total head case?
It seems to be more kind of like violence and just kind of general outbursts and anger management issues. Like, it's really not good, but like the piece is very extensive and just seems like he's been getting away with this kind of carry on for years.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Oh, well, that's a shame for Dionne Warwick, really. I would have liked to have seen that too. Anyway, Esther, which will we have first? Will we have the palate cleanser first, or the thing that's going to leave a dirty taste in your mouth?
You know what, Sean? I'm going to let you pick this week.
Oh, let's go for Wild Mountain Time coming up after this.
On your head be it.
Are you all right?
I'm fine.
What are you doing out there?
Fishing.
That was fishing?
Yeah.
Without a rod? Who were you talking to?
I wasn't talking.
You looked to be talking, then swatting, then you jumped in.
I did not. It's a Kelly's to jump in. I'm O'Reilly.
You're O'Reilly.
What are you doing down by the river?
What I've been doing after this one.
Oh, you're not still from the night before.
I am.
Well, God in heaven, you look the worse for it.
Well, thanks much. You don't look perfect yourself.
There you go. He's fishing without a rod. Holy mother of God. Right. Okay. We, Esther, we know the terrible accents. We know the paddy wackery. What's the essential story here that he's trying to tell?
I mean, it's supposed to be a love story, but like, he even breaks the basic kind of tropes of romantic drama by keeping the characters apart for long stretches of the film. Emily Blunt and Jamie Dornan, who play Rosemary and Anthony, so like there's no chance to get on board with them as a potential couple or to invest with them on them as a potential couple. It's like a series, this is like a series of bad Paddy Wackery sketches, Sean, that would call, I think they'd make the makers of Far and Away blush, to be honest, and it makes Leap Year look like a masterpiece. And I mean, this, the words that have to come out of people's mouths, like actors who I would rate and respect, like, she has to say at one stage, Emily Blunt, "I'll freeze my eggs. If he's slow, I will wait. I believe he will come to me." And just, like, mad stuff. Her horse is named Blister, because that's what we all name our horses. And she has a dog called Flossie. She's a feisty character. She runs a farm in the Midlands. It's this is based on the stage play, you know, the memorably named stage play Outside Mullingar.
Mm.
This is what it's adapted from. But the West
that could
Ireland,
be anywhere. Everywhere is Outside Mullingar, really.
That's true. If you look at it that way. So she's Rosemary, the feisty farmer, and she is mad about Anthony. Has been holding a candle for him for years, waiting for him to think of her in a romantic sense. They have adjoining farms, so there's usual kind of sub the field stuff going on with, you know, fighting over fences and stuff like that. But Christopher Walken is Anthony's father, and, you know, and Anthony's mother died, actually. In one stage he says, when my mother died, I couldn't see colours anymore, which made me really concerned. He should probably go to an optician's, to be honest. But anyway, he is kind of used to this inaction and they're stuck in this trap. But when the father, who's played by Walken, who in a film of scenes has the craziest scene in the film, you'll know it when you see it, is all I'll say. But he decides he's going to sell the family farm to his American nephew, the Yank, played by John Hamm, because of his son's single status. So this kind of jolts Anthony into making a plan and gives Rosemary a bit of hope that finally they'll not only get together as a couple, but finally be able to join the farms. So that's what you're talking about. And then the things they actually get people to do, Begorra, Sean, in this, like, at one stage, Anthony is practicing his proposal on a donkey. And another stage, where Jamie Dornan has to say the words that a cow doesn't recognise him because he's wearing a different raincoat. And so, you know, Emily's Blunt's Rosemary has to say, "I'm all a flutter," when John Hamm starts flirting with her. And then she, like, the freezer eggs thing happens. But another high point of the film was where she kind of does some spontaneous ballet dancing while wearing her shawl and boots, which had me going, when is this set? Because the post van is very old looking. What period is it? Like, it feels like the 50s, or even at that, it's a bit dialed up for the 50s. And then there's a scene, right, where they go to America. And the Twin Towers are gone.
Right.
And I'm
okay.
going, are you telling me this is contemporary? Like, I couldn't believe it. That was a moment for me. And then, you know, it's a struggle really to understand what the cast is doing here. And I think they'll all survive it, of course. But for me, most of this mess falls on John Patrick Shanley, who, again, head-scratchingly wrote both Doubt and Moonstruck, like two really good screenplays.
Mm.
So I don't know. Did we do something to him? Like, I don't know.
Anything good lately, Esther? That's the point. Because, you know, he might have just lost it.
Yeah, possibly. But like, to be honest with you, I am not particularly nationalistic at all. And I was a bit offended now by the stage Irishness. It got to a level like, we're stupid, we like fighting. You know, there were a lot of tropes in there. But even those aside, like as a romantic drama, the film makes little or no sense. Despite the best efforts of the two leads, especially Blunt, who really is here. I get the impression she's like, I'm here now, I'm going to have a stab at it.
Mm.
But the story never builds in any believable way, you know. I was wondering if actually, you know, I'm still wondering, are you in on the act? Does the film exist at all? Is it some sort of elaborate prank carried out by friends of mine, you know?
It's not deliberately crap, perhaps.
It's trying to be a farce, I would say. It's trying to be a bit John Millington Singh, but the writing isn't there. It's not funny or spirited enough. It's quite dead behind the eyes, this film. And then I thought, well, that was mad. And then the last scene happened and it went to a whole other level of craziness.
Right.
I won't reveal, but
okay.
You can find it easily on the internet.
That review in The Guardian I quoted earlier on, they include that point. So, and this is, I assume, the explanation as to why Jamie Dornan isn't interested in Emily Blunt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We won't spoil it for you then, because you'd all want to sit through. How long is this film? This is an important piece of information.
It's 83,000 hours. No, it's just under 2 hours long.
Oh, God.
And it's there on your rental platforms for €15 if you've nothing better to do with your money.
For God's sake.
And I think some people are going to find this an absolute howl. I was more incredulous at it and more, God, this is really bad. How can you make such a bad film with such good people? That was the astonishing thing to me. But I will say one thing. Mayo looks lovely.
It does. Well, Mayo always looks lovely.
Yes.
But probably Mayo wasn't required to overact or deliver a rubbish script.
Exactly.
Mayo just did what Mayo did. Okay, well, there you have it. If you want to waste £15 seeing it. In the meantime, Dean, tell us about our first beer today.
Okay, so first beer is interesting beer, New England IPA, and it's brewed with red potato called Hayes Potato Chips, 6.4% ABV.
Sounds like Wild Mountain Time again.
Well, funny enough, this one has gone the other way. It's kind of cool. It's a collaboration beer. And what they've done is a team from the brewery went over to America, traveled around, did about 2,500 miles over a number of days, visited a whole pile of breweries and did collaboration brews with them. So this beer was originally brewed in 2018 in Buffalo, New York, and then the recipe has been brought back and brewed in Ireland. Huge explosion of fruit flavor in this. Pineapple, passion fruit, grapefruit, peach, mandarin, lemon citrus, lemon zest. It's balanced out with a herbal character, kind of pine, mint, eucalyptus type of flavor. And then it seems like there's a lot of dry hop additions, and also the potato seems to be giving it a kind of a tannic quality. So what you find is that huge amount of juiciness from the fruit, and then that tannic quality kind of dries it out and balances it out very nicely. Good, luscious mouthfeel in it. So that's the description of the beer from one of the 20 breweries that the brewery is from. It's Lochgill Brewery in Sligo. They have done a superb job on it, to be fair to them. The collaboration was with Thin Man Brewery in Buffalo in New York. So great beer. Yeah, really enjoyable.
Somebody wants to know, Dean, is it possible to get any beers from Kraftwerk Brewery in New Zealand? Had some amazing Belgian-style beers in their brewery in Umaro in New Zealand when I was there.
Now, I'm going to say that I don't know of any beers making it over from New Zealand at the moment, but there's a possibility that beers could be making it into the UK and people bringing it over. Now, that being said, anything that was coming into Ireland through the UK has fallen apart since Brexit. It has been a disaster. The bureaucracy on getting stuff out of the UK has increased by about five times. One thing that's interesting going the other way, cream liqueur is going to the UK. Need to be inspected by a vet because it's a product derived from an animal and alcohol. And because it's derived from an animal, it needs to be inspected by a vet before it will be let into the UK. There is some wild things going on with Brexit. And unfortunately, it kicks the other way that if those beers coming from New Zealand through the UK into Ireland, it's likely that they've been stymied. I don't know of them being in Ireland at the moment, but just cautious because there are more and more people bringing in small quantities of beer on occasion.
Has Dean tried Whiplash beers? They've started selling them in my local offy. They're sensational.
They do a great job. Yeah, very creative brewery. They do a wide range of different beers, pale ales and also kind of strong stouts, pastry stouts. They're doing a fakey cake maker, which is a lovely beer. They do a great range of beers. Yeah, lovely.
Can you ask Beer Man where I can get Toohey's or VB? I used to work in Malloy's many years ago. We used to sell it by the pallet load. I don't think they do anymore, says Bart.
Yeah, again, same thing. These Antipodean beers have kind of slid a little bit by the wayside. Toohey's New, Toohey's Dry and Victoria Bitter were all coming in, but I don't believe they are at the moment. Victoria Bitter is very large beer in Australia. I think about 15-16% of the market, and it seems to really split the market. People either love it or hate it. You know, they people who love Victoria Bitter really love it, and then there are people who are really cynical about it. But again, kind of disappeared off the shelves in Ireland. Just I think that as the number of craft beers available locally has increased, the beers coming from a very long way away have kind of slid away because it's about 3 months to get beer from Australia and New Zealand into Ireland. So it's a bit of a challenge to get.
Crikey, yeah. And Fionnuala, it's not the Irish who suffer from being treated as stereotypes in Hollywood. Lucy Liu has written a piece about this, as I understand.
Yeah, she wrote an opinion piece for the Washington Post, I think, in response to the like sharp rise in violence, obviously, against the Asian community with everything that's going on in the world. And very, very good piece if anyone's looking to read that over the weekend. It's in the Washington Post. And she kind of spoke about how, even with her own work, she kind of talked about how she felt fortunate to have moved the needle with some of her mainstream success. Obviously, people know her from Charlie's Angels and everything else, but she basically said there's still a lot further to go. She referenced a recent Teen Vogue piece that I hadn't read, but it basically was talking about how Hollywood cinema perpetuates Asian stereotypes and highlighted her character in Kill Bill. And in this piece, like, the character is described as a dragon lady, cunning and deceitful, uses her sexuality as a powerful tool of manipulation. And Lucy kind of rightly pointed out the fact that, like, why wasn't Uma Thurman, Vivica Fox, Daryl Hannah, why were they not dragon ladies? She put it down to the fact that obviously she's Asian. And very insightful. She talked about how she wasn't able to play certain roles, and the same with the actress Anime Wong, who often lost out on important roles to white stars. And she talks about, like, even when we think, like, I think we like to think about how far we've come and whatever, but when you consider, like, Mickey Rooney and just the stuff that he's done in terms of the yellow face and wearing this buck tooth prosthetic and stuff, that was still, like, in recent memory. So yeah, a long way to go, I think. But then you've, like, obviously, there's a lot of progress we made with the likes of Korean cinema, and we're seeing a lot of representation on TV, but still a long way to go. And I think that's just the point she's trying to make with this piece.
Indeed, a long way to go. Right, you are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We do have a hashtag, by the way. I haven't mentioned any of them so far, but the hashtag is reopening movies for fairly obvious reasons. We're going to take a break. One more beer, one more movie to talk about after this. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. Fionnuala, Esther and Dean are still with us. We have been speaking about Wild Irish Time, which is pretty much what you expect it to be. John says this movie is a covert government strategy to get American tourists to Ireland. Though Owen says people like this still exist. Look at Danny Healy-Ray. Danny Healy-Ray knows exactly what he's doing. So he is not a fool. The brother, on the other hand, that's where irony has gone to die. Angela says, I don't think I'm a particularly insensitive person, but halfway through Nomadland, it dawned on me, this is dull. I've read some excellent accounts of US nomads who live out of trailers or scratch their way from place to place, but this wasn't one. So subtle it almost disappeared. Says Angela. Well, given that Angela brought it up, we might as well talk about Nomadland and find out how insensitive or not Angela is. Here's a clip.
I think I've met you before.
Yeah, I'm Fern.
You gave me a light back in Quartzsite.
Mm-hmm.
I have this for you. What should you have it?
What is that? What's that stone?
That there is dinosaur bone.
Really?
Well, I think so, but I only know what they tell me.
Where are your mom and dad?
Back home in Wisconsin.
Got a girlfriend anywhere?
Well, to be truthful, there's one.
Mm-hmm.
I write letters to her.
Oh, smart man.
I just can't ever write about anything I reckon she'd care about.
You ever try poems?
Can't say I have. Do you know any?
How about one that I used for my wedding vow when I was not much older than you?
Right on.
Okay, that's Nomadland. This is based on a work of journalism, Esther.
It is. It's based on a work of fact, actually. And it's really interesting. Remember we were talking about, was it Minari recently or Sound of Metal? And I said there seems to be a whole trend in filmmaking at the moment of almost being in the moment. And the films almost seem to, even though they're all works of fiction, almost seem to step into documentary territory sometimes. I think this is the most obvious example of this. Chloe Zhao's style is to work like this. She did it with The Rider, which was a Western among a group of underprivileged people in one community, but a work of fiction, a story that she told. But a lot of the real life characters fed in to that story. So it's really interesting what she's doing, I think. I'm not sure everyone would get away with doing it, but she is such a great filmmaker that she does. And I think what she's doing here again is she has Frances McDormand, peerless in my view, and also, though not talked about enough here, the great David Strathairn in a supporting role. But pretty much all of the rest of the cast are real life nomads who live their lives on the roads for various reasons, you know. Some by their doing, some not by their doing. And I think what it does as a film is it really fleshes out the story. You feel like the experience, you feel the experience of these people. And, you know, to your texter, it's a fair point. It is a slow film. It's a slow, deliberately paced film. But it's a stunning Western. Like, it's one of the most beautiful looking films I've seen as well. And it's about all the big stuff told in small ways, Sean. That's what I loved about it. It's just a film packed with little moments. And there's one early scene where Frances McDormand's Fern is back in her former hometown and she runs into a concerned young friend, teenager she meets in the supermarket. It turns out she used to be a teacher. And she says, are you homeless? Is it true you're homeless? And she and Frances says, I'm not homeless. I'm houseless. It's different, right? But it's not all that different because she's lost a lot, I suppose, in along the way. She's in her 60s and Frances McDormand's letting herself look old here and vulnerable. And I loved it. And I'm not going to lie and say this is crazy, but I kept thinking of marriage because she's a little bit quirky. And I kept thinking of marriage years later. And poor Norm, who made all her eggs, has died. And here she is now out struggling in the world. It just really connected to me. And I suppose it's just what a great actor she is to make you have those kind of crazy brain bubbles. But she was in a town called Empire in Nevada. So there's a lot of socialism going on here as well. And looking at America, the American dream and how it's failed a lot of people. not socialism, social orientation. Sociology.
Yeah.
I'll take that. Mm. And so she's based in the town of Empire, Nevada. And one really moving passage towards the end, she says she didn't want to stay there when her husband, Bo, died, but that she felt, it's really moving actually, she felt he was so loved in the town that she wanted to keep his memory alive through staying in the town. And that's a beautiful piece of writing in a scene late in the film. And but then the mine closes and the whole structure of the town is gone. Her house is foreclosed. They've no kids. And suddenly she sees, you know, she sees both a tragedy and an opportunity, that she doesn't have enough money to sustain herself, but she also has nothing to tie her down. Mm-hmm. So she buys this rundown camper van and takes to the road, I suppose, like thousands of other people in the States do in the US through choice or circumstance. And I think by casting lots of real nomads and letting their stories feed into the narrative in this film, it really makes it feel so real, you know. And I think it's really poignant in that it focuses on people who are nearly at retirement age. So, you know, white American people who had a house and a life and a job and family, but are now really struggling and are nowhere near equipped for retirement financially, and obliged to grab odd jobs wherever they can. You know, she goes into a job centre at one stage and says, I want to work. I like to work. You know, after they said, you know, maybe you can consider early retirement, because there's nothing there.
Mm.
But what is also really special about this is the sense of community. Like there is a beautiful line where she talks to someone who's become quite a friend, and says, he says, I never say goodbye. I say, I'll see you down the road. And we always do. So it's people kind of drifting out of each other's lives like that. And it's just beautiful. Then, you know, it is a little bit meandery around the halfway mark. I kind of went, oh, how is this going to work now? And it does work. It doesn't shoehorn in a romance, but she does meet someone very special. A guy called Dave, who's played by David Strathairn. He's looking for a new way of life and someone to share it with. They get on really well, but he's kind of done being on the road. So I think then Fern has to really evaluate. And you do wonder, is she mentally vulnerable and stuff like that at certain points of the film as well, in a really interesting way. And she has to reevaluate, I suppose, whether she's running away from her life by being on the road, or whether being on the road is what's for her. So I adored this. If I see a better film this year, I'll be very happy. It's a mood piece. It's beautifully made. She's a very exciting filmmaker. And I can't wait to see what she's going to do next, because she's doing a marvel.
Yes, she absolutely is. All of which begs the question, though, Esther, and a few people already have texted in about this. Frances McDormand, Meryl Streep, they both have 3 Oscars each now. Who's the winner?
Oh, God, Frances McDormand to me. I'm just a total fangirl, though. I love her and everything she does. You know, I just adore her. No disrespect to Meryl, who I'm sure is like crying in the rain now, voicing my opinion.
actually, Fionnuala, I'll bring you in on this. Would you have an opinion on Frances versus Meryl?
I probably would have been a Meryl stan before I saw Frances in 3 Billboards, and then I think it kind of pipped it for me. I haven't seen Nomadland yet. I'm going to make time for it this weekend, and Wild Mountain Time, because I love Misery, clearly. But yeah, like Frances, she's just such a presence on screen, and so strong in a way that I think just edges Meryl out, in my opinion.
Right. Okay. And this movie, Esther, it's on Disney now. Is it one of those jobbies where you have to have a Disney subscription and then they charge you even more for it?
Nope. It's on Disney Plus, and if you have an account, there it is for free.
Okay.
To watch tonight. A no-brainer.
All right. Fantastic. Right. So, Dean, tell us about our second beer of the day.
Okay, so we've got an oatmeal IPA made with organic oats from Kilbeggan. And now the really cool thing about this beer, that it has all of the tropical fruit and citrus character that you expect from an IPA. It really just explodes in those types of flavors. But the balancing flavors are where it really comes into its own. Got beautiful creamy vanilla and a luscious mouthfeel on it. It's the oats give a kind of a creaminess to beer, and then also a kind of a spice herbal balancing character, white pepper, nettles, coriander coming through. It's called Marooned. This one is Esther's pick from the list of beers that were passed on. So I think Esther was feeling the effects of lockdown and saw Marooned and said, yes, I can relate to that big time. But they have done a great job. This one is from Dead Center Brewing. And again, talking about this idea of craft beer community, one of the things that's lovely in the States, if you talk to an American craft brewer and ask him what beers he likes, usually the answer will be, well, I assume you're not asking about my beers. And they'll start naming beers from a whole pile of other breweries that people would think that they're competing with. But the attitude is, we're all part of one community and we're all just kind of putting out good beer. The guys in Dead Center, they've a 6-hectolitre brew house in Athlone. But this beer is brewed under contract by 12 Acres Brewing in County Laois. So two guys working together. So kind of similar to the collaboration brewery where you've got two breweries across continents working together. These are two breweries within the country working together to make things work. Just to mention that the beer that I mentioned earlier on, the 12% Imperial Stout, that one is called Around the Clock. And it's a special brew by the Porterhouse. 7 malts, 7 hops. Boiled for 24 hours to bring it up to 12% ABV, and then aged for 365 days in sherry and bourbon casks.
Crikey.
And they've done a really good job, and it's absolutely beautiful beer. And the way that it's working for Indie Beer Week, beercloud.ie and at Indie Beer Week, they are putting out kits of beer. So you buy your kit of beer, either 6 beers for Thursday, 10 beers for Friday, or 10 beers for Saturday on the I get the dates right. I think I'm going to make a mistake if I don't check it. The 19th, 20th, and 21st of May. So ordering the beers up before the 16th, and then they're shipped out, and then they're doing online tastings with the brewers involved, explaining what's behind the beers, and everybody just kind of getting to taste a whole range of beers that maybe they haven't had the chance if it's not in their local off-license to taste.
Okay. And there's, as Dean said, there's a gazillion of them there. David in West Clare, just on Nomadland, says, I can't understand how a movie about camper vans is doing so well. They should have come to Ballybunion in the summer and let the cameras roll away that have got the same footage. That's maybe a next movie, David. That would be very an intriguing prospect. And Fionnuala, you were telling us about how, you know, production in Hollywood at least is coming back a bit, which was good to hear. But they're kind of hoping that maybe more people will be vaccinated, a bit like here, by the end of June.
Yeah, so it's looking like the COVID safety protocols are happening until June 30th, but they're looking like Los Angeles is going to move into like their least restrictive tier or zone, which will allow for 75% capacity at like concerts and sporting events and everything else. But as you said as well, there's some of the protocols, it seems like they're not going to require those working on these productions to be fully vaccinated. And I think they're going to leave it up to kind of the employees to handle how that works. In terms of some of the other companies heading back, it's looking like Sony is planning a phased return in June. And then Disney is also looking to bring back their staffers from their work from home starting in July. So definitely moving in the right direction, slowly but surely, probably the same as here. So hopefully we can start seeing these raft of movies and TV shows come with it, because I need new things to watch.
I hope there's not movies about the bloody pandemic.
Oh,
I don't know if anybody would want to see that.
This is the thing, and I'm finding it very difficult with reality TV shows because they're covering that a lot. And I mean, I'm living the reality. I don't want to see like rich, happy people pretending they're suffering as well. Like, no, thank you. No bueno. I'm the same as you. No pandemic stories, please. Hopefully yeah. Michael Bay is listening and taking notes frantically, but yeah, please, no pandemic stories.
Big explosions during the pandemic. You're not really going to watch Wild Irish Time, are you?
Oh, I fully, fully am. And like, I'm worried because Esther didn't even seem to like ironically enjoy it. But I don't know, I need to see this. Like, it's just, it's mad. It's too mad not to watch, I think.
Okay, well, we'll ask you next week whether you should have done that or maybe bought yourself a nice pair of socks. In the meantime, Fionnuala, thanks very much. That was Fionnuala Jones, Esther McCarthy and Dean McGuinness there. That's our lot for today and indeed for this week. We have a best of on Monday that we will be back with a live show on Tuesday. Kieran's up next on News Talk with the Hard Shoulder. Our production team today, Aidan McKelvey, Michael Quilligan and Claire Collins. Have a lovely bank holiday weekend.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.